Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us on Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will become. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The butterfly literally dissolves into its cells, and then it has to reform into the butterfly. As if that's not difficult enough, it then has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly when it gets out of the cocoon. While none of that is easy, I'm sure, it's not easy busting through limits that people place upon us. And today, I have a brand new friend. For anyone who follows me, you know that last week I was at the Illinois Council for Exceptional Children Fall Convention, and I met Margaret there. And Margaret's story is beautiful, and it leads into this great program that I can't wait to share with you so that hopefully more people can utilize this program and help even more students across the country. So, Margaret, it's good to see you again. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. My name is Margaret. I am in Connecticut. So I also was at the ICEC with my company, Silas Solutions, which is a social and emotional learning behavioral solution. And we work with K through 12, and it started with special education, but it's also general education. And I was fortunate to meet Shelley. We were both in our booths trying to tell people what we do. And that is how we became friendly and now my new friend, but I never ever had anything to do with special education in my life prior. I was always in sales. I was selling software. I was selling advertising and media. And then my child needed a IEP and I had no idea what an IEP was. And I had no idea what a 504 was. And I have been fortunate to be able to have, you know, education and know certain things, but you don't know everything. And my child unfortunately got ill with a neurological illness. And one day, you know, third grade, he just stopped being who he was. And we thought he was just angry, but he wasn't. And we had teachers that, thank God, called me and said, something's not right, and pulled me aside and said, I'm a mom, and if I were you, I would go to the school and say that you want to have a meeting. And I'm like, okay, a meeting about what? You know, what do I, a meeting that my child's not behaving? That's my problem. You know, I'm not disciplining enough. I'm not telling him, giving him, you know, the structure at home. And then I learned that school has to provide for your child in public school. You know, they're responsible and they have to make the accommodations that the child needs, no matter what. If the child's not behaving, if the child has an illness, if the child has, you know, a special disability. But I just was saying this to you, Shelley, you don't know what you don't know. And yeah. He wasn't born this way, and I had another child, and I have two stepchildren, and we, you know, do your homework, you do it, you turn it in. If you need a tutor, if you need extra help, fine. But all of a sudden, you know, my child's not reading. My child's hung like underneath the desk, crying, not talking. And the next thing I know is we're fighting with the school, which I live in a, my school's tiny. It's two classes per grade, and you don't want to be that kid, right? And I see, and I've read in Shelley's book, you know, you always say, or I think one of your goals was that you don't want people to look at children as, you know, those kids, and you don't want teachers to give them special, not special needs, but, you know, if they achieve a 90, did they really, really should they get that 90? Should their 90 be a little bit different than a mainstream 90? And all of a sudden I'm like, oh my goodness, is this my life? So I didn't think I needed an advocate. What's an advocate? I was like, I don't know. We're going to a meeting, and they said, okay, you know, we'll put him in a class where he could do his math and English a little bit better. I said, I can't get him to school, let alone him do English and math. And, you know, he was diagnosed with having PANDAS, which is a pediatric autoimmune neurological disorder associated with strep. So he had a strep infection that wasn't caused, and it turned to autoimmune encephalitis of the brain, which causes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have heard of PANDAS before, but I did not realize that that's what all the letters meant.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's very abrupt. It happens overnight. And it is, if you read the 10 symptoms, all 10, most children have all 10. And, you know, sudden onset of OCD, anxiety, regression, tantrums. You know, at one point we thought, was he misdiagnosed and he's autistic? You know, on the floor in fetal position, could no longer read math, couldn't do math. No cognitive skills, lots of memory loss, even frequent urination where it's uncontrollable. Your brain is swelling. So there's lots of things that are happening that you can't, and you're past the fact that, you know, if you just start antibiotics, it's kind of too far gone. So you could try. And some people have been fortunate, but he's had treatments. And he was at the point where, you know, we would try to send him to school and I would go to school and they couldn't find him and he'd be underneath the desk. And I said, I'm fairly bright. I went to college and I don't think being underneath the desk is appropriate. And I don't think that you guys can do what you need to do. And I don't think you can control him. And one of the things my husband said, and thank God for him, was, if you say you got this, then we trust you with it. But if you don't have it, you need to let us know. Meaning, we don't want to send them out of the district. Mm-hmm. But again, when it goes back to the law, it's their responsibility. So I didn't know these laws. I was fortunate that a friend of mine was is a special education attorney. And she also is an advocate. So she helped me. And she sat with me and did a lot of brainstorming. And when it got to the point where we had to meet with school, she had children in the school and we didn't want to cross any lines. So I hired an advocate. And there again, I was fortunate enough to hire an advocate. But I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know that you have the, I didn't know that the minute you say you want to have a meeting about your child and a possible, like, throw in the word 504 or IEP, where I live, and I'm not sure with every state, they have to oblige and say, yes, we will make a meeting. And I brought the advocate. And the first few times I didn't bring the advocate, I had to fight with the vice principal, who would tell me that it was not a medical illness. And
I mean, after what you just described earlier, I don't understand how someone could say that.
Right. So we had a neurologist, we had a neuropsychiatrist, we had a therapist, and it was, and I said, I feel like I was fighting for like, I felt for my kid, I was fighting for my kid, you know, and I was fighting for my kid's rights. And it was like, you know, and I'm not saying, okay, if you're born with a disability or you have an accident of your disability, you get sick, none of them matters. Not one is worse than the other. But it was like, you already have this horrible thing going on in your family and you have to prove yourself. Like, I always felt, and I don't know if other families feel this way, but I always felt like I was trying to make it worse than it was. Like,
that was what you were thinking. They were,
yeah, like, I had to, you. Like, you know, I mean, I always had to tell them things that you don't want to share, some of the dark, deep secrets. And Shelley, you said in your book, you said, help educators have a better understanding of all the students they teach. Also, many educators have no idea what a family with a member with special needs goes through on a daily, monthly, or yearly basis. Some families faced multiple times where they had to send their child hundreds of miles away. I had to send my child away twice.
Yeah.
It's not something you want to share with the school district, but I felt as though I had to do that. They had to know how bad it was for me to get what he needed. And then I realized that I'm his best advocate. You know, I'm the one that can do what I have to do to get him what he needs. And it's truthfully still a struggle on a daily basis.
Yeah. And I appreciate the reading out of my book. I didn't pay her to do that. I promise.
Well, she did.
Anybody's watching. But yeah, one of the reasons that I do this is to hopefully enlighten people and change their perspective about the abilities that everybody has and to not limit that potential. That's why it's called hashtag no limits, because I worked with too many people, and in interviewing the people for the book, I heard them express the same thing, that they were told that their children couldn't do certain things, or wouldn't become certain things, or wouldn't be able to do certain things. And those are the kinds of limits that I'm talking about. It's that perspective that people have of, you know, well, you're not going to be able to have a happy life. You're not going to be able to get a driver's license or go to college or take a family vacation. And some of that our society does make very difficult to happen. I mean, some family vacations, depending on the needs of the person in the family that has the unique needs, it does become more difficult, but it isn't that they can't do it. But to have this mindset of, this is as far as you're going to go, and I'm not going to do anything to even potentially help you get beyond that, because I know this is as far as you're going to go in my mind. And there are so many things out there that, since I've been doing this show, especially your episode 109, and I have met some incredible people. I have, and you're going to share about a program soon. And I've learned about other programs, other devices, other things that are available to not just people with unique needs, but those who are quote unquote typical, whatever that looks like. And so I'm hoping to change that perspective, especially of teachers, because outside of parents, in those early years, teachers are the ones who are with our children the most. And so they have to have that, I feel, that same open mindset of, what can we achieve? How far can we go? And it's very difficult, I think, for teachers, because there are so many places that a child can go that they don't always think about everything and remember to offer everything. And so that's why it is so important for you as the parent to amplify their voice. I have a friend who says amplify their voice instead of be their voice. And I really like the way that she words that, because that's what you're doing, is you're amplifying your child's voice at these meetings. And I appreciate all the parents that go through that, because since I've been an IEP coach and sat on the table on the side with the parents, I've really understood even better than I did when I was a special educator sitting on with the education's part of the IEP team, what it feels like to have all that information thrown at you by all these other experts. And you yourself are the expert because you're the child's parent. You know them. You've known them before the teachers got involved. You're there with them while the teachers are involved, and you're going to be with them after the teachers are involved. And so it's so important that you do what you can do and you learn what you can learn. And then you also give yourself grace for those times that you didn't know what you didn't know.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And the other thing that I've learned going through this, and I recommend, and I didn't do this until this year, and my child is now, we're 4 years in, but don't be afraid to reach out to the teachers, mm-hmm. introducing yourself and what your child needs and what will make a difference, because my child does have limits are put on him by a specific teacher, perhaps, but if that teacher knows he loves to do, or they're talking about geography and he loves places, he's going to be engaged. He's going to be part of that conversation. So get him involved. Don't just separate him and put him in a specific, you know, corner. There's lots of times we've had to speak with teachers and we do it over and over again. And you know what? Some kids can, you know, in this situation, speak up for themselves. And even those that can are sometimes embarrassed to say, you know, my teacher called me, you know, referred to me as it's, you know, behavior is not acceptable, or, you know, sit over there because I don't want you disrupting. Well, then they're just also feeling separated again and, you know, excluded. Yeah. So like, you know, Shelley said, you don't have to be their voice, but, you know, what do you call it? Be
amplify their voice.
Amplify your voice for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we have the special education law, and it's a great law, and it's opened the doors to many people to be able to go into schools. The problem with it is that there isn't sort of like a checks and balances system as far as, you know, anybody coming in and checking with schools and making sure that they are doing what is necessary. And so it falls upon the shoulders of the parents to do that sort of things. And so many parents don't know that they're supposed to, or that they can do those kinds of things. And it isn't that schools are intentionally doing things wrong or teachers are doing things, you know, inappropriate on purpose. Sometimes we just get into habits. We get into ideas that we think are the ways things are supposed to be because somebody told us that, or somebody before us did it that way. And we just, in a lot of time, and especially now with teacher shortages all across the country, sometimes I think our teachers just go in and they just focus on one day at a time to get through that one day. Mm-hmm. And it does take somebody from the outside who's looking in to say, hey, something's not right here. We need to look at this a little bit deeper. And hopefully when we do that, teachers are welcoming and understanding and go, oh, okay. I mean, I can't say that I was always like, you know, if a parent came to me and said, well, what about this or that? I can't say that I was always like, oh, great. Okay, let's do this. Thank you for sharing. But I would try to at least think about it and see if I could figure it out or figure out a way to incorporate a parent's suggestion into what I was doing. If it was like vastly different, for sure. But if it was kind of easily done, not even kind of easily, if I could see the benefit for it, I would do it.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that more teachers are getting that now, but I'm afraid they're not. I'm afraid that our way of educating our teachers, who are teachers today because of the shortage, that we're not doing a good job of explaining IEPs, explaining special education, explaining 504s. And for anyone who's watching who doesn't understand what the difference is, basically, and this is a very, very basic definition, if a child needs an IEP, which stands for Individualized Education Program, then they need specially designed instruction. And they might get related services and then some accommodations and modifications. If they don't need specially designed instruction, but maybe they need a related service or they need accommodations and modifications, then a 504 would cover that. So the basic difference is that an IEP has specially designed instruction added to it and the 504 doesn't. That's a very basic, quick overview. There's a whole lot more. So somebody please don't yell at me because I didn't explain that very thoroughly, but this episode is not about that. So so what does your son have? Does he have an IEP or does he have a 504?
He has an IEP. Yes.
Okay.
And I still don't think it's enough. I have a meeting on Tuesday because I realized, you know, he's getting, and again, this is his take. He's getting in trouble when the teacher says, take out your notebook, and he doesn't do it. But his memory is very short, and he does have a para professional in the class. So I felt as though he needs individualized direction. So he needs either the para to tap him on the shoulder and say, take out your notebook, or, you know, when the teacher makes that announcement, she goes over to him. And it kind of falls in line with the teacher shortage. I, of course, get, you know, my claws out and I want to yell and I want to scream because it's your kid. And then I try to think, well, they have a shortage. Like, I know the shortage is out there. I just met with someone who does virtual placements for teachers because they can't find teachers. And I try not to get angry, but I also try to think, like, why am I the one that's suggesting individualized, you know, direction? Like, why didn't they come up with that? I mean, I've had his neuro psychiatrist on the phone with them at our last meeting, telling them about his short-term memory and his brain fog. And they didn't put that in the IEP. And, you know, my sister, fortunately, who is a social worker, said, well, that's what's in the IEPs of my children. And I said, well, that's something they should put in. The other thing is, you know, what's for homework? He has no idea. So, you know, I need someone to make sure that's written down every day. And it's not being written down. And I get mad. And then I say, look, you know, his special education teacher couldn't meet with him the last period because she was called into another parent meeting. You know, can I get angry?
Yeah.
There's more than my child that needs help. So they're short staffed, but it's still your kid. And you have to, you know, maybe I have to wait my turn, but, you know, so I have the meeting next week and that will be addressed. But again, you don't know what you don't know. I don't know that there's specialized, you know, direction and they could write that on the IEP. And for anyone who doesn't know, you know, that's what their teachers are supposed to be following, the IEP. You know, I want that IEP next to them when they're doing their teaching. It should be right next to them so they know what that child is supposed to get and need for that specific class. And it doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And it you know, as a special ed teacher myself, when I would write my lessons, if I had five kids who had five different levels of math, they each had their own lesson, because I had to work with each of them. If I had 20 kids and they each had 20 different levels of math, then I had 20 lessons in math, because that's why we have the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and the Individualized Education Program. I mean, and it is something that teachers get overwhelmed, because not only were we both at the conference, but I spoke three times. And one of the sessions was about communicating with parents and collaborating with parents. And I had one of the teachers and she's like, I'm already doing so much. Where am I going to find the time to communicate daily with some parents? Or when am I going to find the time to build that relationship with parents? I want to. I'm not saying I don't want to do these things. I just don't know where I'm going to find the time to do it. And so I gave her some suggestions. You know, I said, first of all, it's not going to be every parent that wants daily communication, but you know, you can design templates that will satisfy both the amount of time that you have and the information that the parent wants, mm-hmm. you know, or like in your situation where you said, you know, your son's special education teacher wasn't with him at the end of a day to write down his homework for that night. That happens. Life happens. And I appreciate that you understand that. But what I hope then the school understood was nobody was able to help him at the end of the day. He went home without his materials for his homework. The next day he comes back, he doesn't have his homework done. It's not his fault mm-hmm. because his accommodation of having someone write his homework in there wasn't completed. So he doesn't get a zero, or he doesn't get a late assignment score, or he doesn't get somehow a negative consequence.
Right.
You know, and that's, I'm totally understanding of life, but what I get really frustrated about is, okay, yeah, life happens, but you want to give yourself the excuse of life happens, but you need to give that grace to the student then too, you know?
For sure. Yeah.
Behavior intervention plans aren't always followed to the letter. That's okay. If you're going to have that grace for yourself, then give that grace to the child when they're acting out, and you know, they, and it's because they've had too many changes or, you know, whatever, it's their behavior plan hasn't been followed.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
100%. Yeah.
And that's something, that's one of those you don't know that you don't know. A lot of times I will put that in when I'm having meetings and I'm there with the families is, okay, we have this BIP, this behavior intervention plan. We have these accommodations because we know that this child is, he struggles with change. So one of the things is, you know, give them advance notice of change. Well, sometimes you can't because an assembly happens and you're not told until the last minute. And then, you know, it's okay, we have to go off to the assembly, and the child might act up because they didn't get that advance notice. Well, what happens when that occurs and the child didn't get the advance notice? And, you know, the school part of the IEP team looks at me like, well, we always give the accommodations. We always give the advance notice. I'm like, yeah, but let's put it in there about what happens if that doesn't happen.
Right. There's always an if.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just life, you know, and to have that grace for both parties at the table. And I hate to say it like that, but it does kind of seem like that's the way it delineates out, is you have the school's part of the team and you have the parent part of the team. And they're still part of the same team, but oftentimes they're not working together as a team.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So how did it affect your family when this all started with your son? I mean, I said in the kind of the advertisement for today, like, and you mentioned it at the beginning, like everything was going typical. And then he went to bed one night and he woke up the next day and he was like a different person.
It was, still has, it's horrible. We used to go on family vacations. I worked full time in New York City. My husband as well. So I had a job where I managed a team. I lost two jobs in the last, 4 years that I was working. And my daughter completely backed away from the family, stayed in her room. My child's behaviors were really out of control. They were, breaking things, throwing things. He didn't know why he was being how he was. Everything was a fight. So it's took a lot on the family. It takes a huge toll on a marriage. It's when your kids, he was in third grade, the end of third, he was December of third grade. So he was 8 years old. And my daughter was in fifth grade and she's starting middle school, which is hard enough. So it was really difficult, and it's getting a little bit better at times, but not 100% great. My son, didn't go to school for 6 months. And then I had him in a special needs school that was close by for a year. And it's definitely, everyone says, oh, Margaret, you're so strong. You're so strong, and you don't feel that way. But I've learned so much that you have to just keep fighting. Mm-hmm. And, now I couldn't work the way I was working. And, so things had to change, finances, doctors, insurance. Some people take the insurance, some people don't. And it's a lot of money for seeing lots of these specialists. And, mental health crisis today, you can't get an appointment with someone for the last 2 years, especially during COVID, and you have to go out of network. And out of network's a lot of money. And you sometimes say, do I pay for it? I used to say to my husband, when my son had to get a treatment and they were telling it's going to be $35,000 for a treatment, if insurance doesn't cover it. Insurance covered it, but we weren't sure. And I'd say to him, I don't care. We sell our house and we live in an apartment, or I go, I don't care. I live in my car. You do what you need to do. It didn't get to that, but it's scary. And your other children get upset, and angry. Why, and everything's about the other kid, and everything is always, oh, it's about him. It's about him. It's about him. And a lot of times I did what I needed to do to protect my daughter from his behavior. So I would be with him a lot more, and it wasn't because I wanted to be, it was because I didn't want her to hurt from it. And it's caused a lot of sadness for me. And I feel like it's caused a lot of separation between me and her, you know, and she's just 14. Yeah. And hopefully one day she will say, I know my mom had to do the things she had to do. But now I know, like, all the parents that are going through what I'm going through with a child, doesn't matter what the if there was an illness or a problem, their families, most of them feel the same way. You know, it's really hard. It's really hard. And it's really hard at first when you walk into a restaurant and your child is not behaving, or he has, you know, my son has tics and he has vocal tics and he does it a lot of times out of nerves and people look at you. And I'll never forget that my husband's friend who has a severely autistic child said, you're never going to be okay with your family and your marriage until you accept what you have with your child right now and who he is and what he is. And until you accept that, and I don't care if someone looks at us, I don't care, you know, like now I know I don't care, you know, it is what it is. I can't change it.
Right.
So you have to do a lot of exception, and you have to also, which I didn't do this until the last probably 8 months, is do things for myself. Mm-hmm. And do anything for myself. I was in a hole. I didn't want to come out. I pushed. And then finally I started talking to one of my best friends that I grew up with, Steven, and he was working for a company. And he said, everything you're going through, I think you could work with us and be a consultant. And I said, I can't work a lot. You know, I have to always go to doctors or I have to meet with the school. And it was just a perfect fit because I truly believe in, you know, these kids that do have special needs, or, I mean, even if, you know, a kid has a 504 because they have ADD, you know, let's say, they still could be made fun of, right? They're still pulled out. They're because they're being pulled out of a class, or they could take a test, you know, for more time. Oh, why is he getting more time? But if we teach kids, and better yet, their families, about social emotional learning, and, you know, what it takes to be socially accepted and make decisions that are more responsible, like not calling a kid, you know, a dummy or something on the playground, then maybe my daughter would be doing better right now. You know, yeah. Maybe she wouldn't feel as alone as she did or does. And I was fortunate to meet, you know, Steve Kane and Chris Dudick. And they were part of Silas, and I started working with them. And the product is all about social, emotional learning, executive functioning, transition vocational. And it's been great.
That's awesome. So before we get into Silas Solutions, I just want to thank you for being so open about the difficulties, because I sometimes don't think people think about it from the parent's perspective and what the parent goes through, especially when it does happen similar to your situation. But I think all parents have a similar response and a similar journey to yours, no matter when, you know, if it's at birth, if it's found out in utero, if it's, mm-hmm. you know, that the child is 5 or 10 or 15, whenever it happens. And I think we need to have empathy more than we do about how difficult it is, because not only was it difficult for your child who was going through this, but you said it was very difficult on you and your husband and his sibling. And sometimes we just don't think about that. We think outside the school doors is not thought about during the school day. And those kinds of things affect what happens during the school day, just like any other thing would. And I'm actually going through a book right now, and it's called Fostering Resilient Learners, Having Trauma-Sensitive Classrooms. And what you guys went through is a trauma.
Oh, 100%.
And how that affects everybody. You know, I mean, I'm sure he has friends who were affected, and, you know, that their behaviors kind of, and some of their demeanor changed as well, because you know, on Tuesday or whatever day this, you know, they're playing and he's fine. And he's the same person that they knew on Monday and the week before. And then all of a sudden on Wednesday, who is this person? Why is this happening? You know, I mean, and so it's, we educate the whole person. We don't just teach math or teach science or teach second grade or special education. We're teaching an individual, and that individual has parts that come from everywhere. And I think it's so important that we recognize that and that we recognize those parts that are coming from everywhere and how those are affecting the whole family.
Yeah.
And so thank you very much for, we didn't really kind of go over that ahead of time that I might get to that question. And I, as a, in a flow of a conversation, I never know exactly what I'm going to ask or where it's going to go. And so I appreciate the honesty. It was breaking my heart listening to you talk about what you experienced, because I know it's not just your experience. It's the experience of so many families that I know.
Yeah. And that's why I'm an open book. I've learned that does it make other people feel better? It makes other people know they're not alone. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really hard to be alone on this journey.
Yeah.
Really. And that's why I welcome anyone who wants to reach out to me or talk to me. And I've met so many people along the way. Have we stayed in touch? No, but people call me all the time with questions. Mm-hmm. I'm very involved with the Pandas Network, and the creator of it will give my number. Just to talk to people, because again, they don't even know what to do with the child in school.
Right.
So
right.
I'm happy to share my story.
Well, I very much appreciate that. And so let's go into, because that was a very nice segue of talking about doing things for yourself. And then we started talking about Silas Solutions.
Sure.
So let's talk a little bit about that, how you got involved with it. I mean, you kind of talked about that a little bit, but how you really jumped in and how that's helped you and your family and everyone else that, you know, right, that uses it.
Sure. So Silas Solutions is a platform or a software solution for students, could be campers, students, through K through 12. And it started off just with special education students. And this story I love, and Chris, the founder, doesn't give himself enough pat on the back, but he was, I believe, with Nickelodeon. He was a designer, engineer, creating animation and movies. And he had his own movie maker studio. And I believe his aunt, who is a speech pathologist and another teacher relative, said, we really want students to have the ability to start making videos. Can they come to your studio? Sure, they come. There were a special education class. A lot of them were autistic and they had no boundaries. They had no emotional control, you know, not saying things that were appropriate. But the minute Chris got them on the computer, they were engaged. They were asking the questions they needed to be asking. And they were creating beautiful, you know, powerful videos. And Chris said, wow, I think we have something here. You know, we could create maybe a curriculum around social and emotional learning and using a video avatar type thing where they could act things out. So Silas was born. They created a curriculum and it was for, you know, tier two and tier three. Now it's tier one as well. And this movie making allows children to have a lesson that is taught to them by their teacher. And the teacher can use it during ELA. So it's an English language arts. And we follow CASEL competencies. So it could be about self-awareness. It could be about social responsibility. It could be, you know, so we could talk about emotions. They could talk about how to say things appropriately to one another, giving gratitude. And it's something that, you know, when I was growing up and you were probably growing up, it wasn't enforced in the schools. It wasn't something we talked about. And now the, you know, states are really putting a focus on this being part of curriculum. Teachers sometimes don't find time for it. My school specifically that my kids went to, they talked about mindfulness and they created, you know, slime and, you know, lava lamps and things like that. But they didn't do an activity where, you know, you actually have the ability to make a movie. And kids, even adults, don't want to look each other in the eye and have a talk that is about their feelings or about their emotions. But when you're doing it, be creating a virtual puppet, it's much easier. And if you do something for 15 seconds where it's saying, you know, I really want to go on the slide, but Sally said, no, I'm going on the sandbox, and they got to fight about it, they can actually create a script and say in a better way how they should have spoken to each other. So Silas allows you to do that. We have principals that even have kids that are in ninth grade use it for just that reason. So they have to sit outside the office and use the movie making situation to do that. But not just social emotional learning, we learn from our clients that there's executive functioning. And that was like one of the biggest things that we found our clients were asking for, because someone might say, oh, they have ADD or they have ADHD. But really, I don't know, if you tell me to stop doing something that I love to do, I don't throw a tantrum, but I might be pissed. And if you tell me to go brush my teeth and put away my shirt and then go, you know, downstairs for breakfast, at 6, 7 years old, I might be all flustered and not know what that is either. But there is something called executive functioning, and we created a curriculum around that. So it's teaching, you know, about engaging appropriately or focusing. And we've created all these lessons that teachers can use. And I think the big thing besides the movie making component is that we have a screener. So are you just teaching social emotional learning, or are you learning about your kids? So we have a screener that lets the teacher screen the child, 15 questions. We have the send it home to the parent or guardian and the student. You could combine all this, get the results, and then depending on what it says, we see what the child is deficient in. Is it self-awareness? Is it self-management? And then an individualized lesson can be created for that child.
That's amazing.
And all these results are stored with data. They could be shared in an IEP meeting at any time. And what's great about the lessons is there's a home topic. So when I don't know what my kid's doing, all the teacher has to do is press click and email home what they went over that day. And parents are then, or guardians are included. And, you know, I might, as a parent, I suck at structure. I mean, I will tell you, like, I'm so loosey-goosey at it. But what I've learned from my special ed teachers that my kids, you know, my son uses, structure, structure, structure. That's the only way. So I need to know what he's doing at school. If I'm not following it, I'm screwing it all up. So that home component I find very important. And I am doing this because I believe in it. I do feel that children that are in third grade, it's harder and harder today with social media, and kids are mean. And if they learn ways to deal with each other now, and it's enforced, and it's enforced at home, they're going to be much better off in middle school. They're going to be much better off in high school. They're going to be able to know how to take care of themselves, become independent, and live a life. Whether they're a special needs child or whether they're mainstream, it doesn't matter. We all need it. So that's why I went into it, and I enjoy it. I get to speak with superintendents and principals and teachers and meet people like you.
Well, yeah, it sounds like such an amazing program. Is there any way that you can pull up the and show like an example or?
Sure. I could show a movie of what kids have done. Let me.
And I did not, and I'm going to make one really quick to put in here what the website is. Normally I have that done ahead of time, and I did not have that this time. So while you're working on pulling that up, I'm going to work on getting the website pulled up and onto the.
Okay. And let me see if you could see my screen now.
There we go. It should be coming up.
On every vacation at a verbal home, there's someone like you who reunited the family to make up for lost.
Love commercials, right?
Yeah. So personal space.
Hey, how are you? Move back, please. You're too close.
Okay, I will.
There you go.
Wow, that is a really great t-shirt. Where can I buy one?
I bought it at Target. It was $12.
Cool. What section? Is it 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, or 18?
It's 21.
Okay, great. Thank you. See you tomorrow. Bye.
My name is Cole. What's your name?
My name's Justin. How's your day going?
Good. Have a great day.
See you later.
So those were Tier 2 and Tier 3 schools. And I believe this is a Tier 1 school where they were doing a topic on bullying.
Okay. Hey, Tori, bring your new bike to the playground so we can ride them together.
No, you're too slow and you can't do tricks. I'm going to ride it with Ken today.
Tori, you're really hurting my feelings. What did I ever do to you?
That's fine, then. I'll just ride bikes with someone else.
Wait. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I wanted to ride with Ken, but I acted badly by talking to him.
I don't understand why we all can't just ride together.
You're right, Chris. I'm sorry. See you at the park.
So that's just an example of how you could use the movies to... Stop screen. How you could use the movies to take your social narratives that you may create or you're creating with your teacher or your student and then make a 15-second, 30-second movie into something that comes to life. And we have the younger students that on Friday afternoons, they might roll out a red carpet. Actually, like teachers will go get a red carpet. They'll get juice and popcorn and you could watch the movie.
How fun.
Yeah.
And so... How long has this been around and like how many school districts do you have it in now? And
so it has been around for about 5 years, you know, in development and being used a little bit, but very active in the last 3 years. So we are in 10 different states. We're in about 47 different districts and we are in one school in Canada.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
So we do have, so hi, Fran. Fran is joining us from Southern Illinois. So I just wanted to acknowledge that she had popped on. So when, is it a school license? Do you sell these individually? How does it work?
Great question. So both. If a school wants it for the whole entire school, it would be a school license. And then all students can use it. Students have their own accounts. Teachers have their own accounts. Teachers can assign lessons to students and students will see it in their dashboard. But teachers could also do the lesson with the student at the same time. We do have some schools that just, you know, the school psychologist or the school counselor would want an account only for maybe 5 students. So we could do that as well. So you could do it by student or by school. We have, once you hit 16 students, then it's automatically a school license. That's what we do. Okay. And obviously there's training. So we do, right now we're able to do in-person training because the states are kind of easy to get to, but we do virtual training as well. And then there's also the ability, you know, if you wanted to do a multi-year type of contract, and then if you do, like, if there's, we have some schools that have, you know, 15 schools in their district. So the price, you know, continues to decrease based on how many schools there are, but it's very affordable. And there's not that many out there of social emotional learning. Right. And we just keep creating more curriculum. We also have an ABA curriculum and we've partnered with actually Dr. Torres at Rutgers University.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she has a grant that she is actually going to, she uses Silas. So her data on children. So what her point is to help health professionals, teachers, as well as parents provide best treatment, education, and support. And she's using Silas to develop this research. So she does a computer-based approach towards her research.
That is so cool. I'm going to pull up the website because I know you shared what you did, but I just wanted to give people sort of a quick overview of the website. So there looks like there's a video that might tell a little bit more and give some graphics about what you have already spoken about. Mm-hmm. And then under the solutions, well, come on, go. Oh, okay. So I have to click on that. So then, yeah, it talks a little bit more about each of the,
right.
The screeners. Perfect. And you said this is K-12, right?
Yes, K through 12.
Okay. Yeah. Applied behavioral analysis. And that's something that I just had a client reach out to me recently, and they were asking about some ABA types of services in their school. And they were saying, and unfortunately for the parent, the school was right that they don't have to provide a BCBA to do ABA, so a board certified behavior analyst to provide applied behavioral analysis instruction. But it looks like this could be something that absolutely would be even more of a supplement and more helpful than just getting a teacher trained, which is what the school told the parent. The school was right that they don't have to provide a BCBA. So I'm just kind of going through and, so they get to create their own avatar. Each student would get to make their own avatar. And yep.
Students could come on, and what they do is they create their own avatar. They are able to create a script based on the lesson that they're teaching. So we also provide a script that you could use. So, you know, if you're in a first grade class, they might not be able to write the script. The teacher can write it, and you could act it out together. So there's a lot of hand-holding that you can do, or children could do it separately on their own. And you could also have kids do it virtually. So if you have one kid at home and you have two kids in the school, you could share the link with them or the code. They could log in and make something where, you know, they're all in different locations.
That's incredible. And I just noticed that it's pre-made lessons in over 75 languages.
Yes. Yep.
That is stellar.
Yeah. And wow. Also we integrate with Immersive Reader. So that's Microsoft. So if there's a dyslexic child, it will show you, you know, a black screen. So the font is coming out. It also, like I said, the ELA. So it's giving you all your nouns, verbs, adjectives, everything highlighted. It also will speak. So we have stories in there that the teachers can go over, and you could click on it, and it's the YouTube read aloud book for the students. You could also, if you have a child that doesn't speak, we have the ability for the child to use devices. So that could plug in and work for that child as well.
That's awesome. And yeah. As I was looking at this, and it just dawned on me and thinking about how as a student is progressing through it, do the lessons then adapt to what the child, like, is there a way to assess, okay, now this child, maybe they were only understanding this concept at, say, you know, 50%, now they've got it at 80%. Does the curriculum automatically adapt, or how does that work?
So there's a pre and post test that we offer mm-hmm. in every single piece of curriculum. So when you're starting the lesson, you could take the pre-test, you could see where you stand, teach the lesson, and then you can, you know, take the post-test afterwards. You could also go, you know, if the third grade is already progressed, you could go into the fourth grade. So you don't have limits as to which grade that you're staying within. We also provide what we call jumpstart. So there are additional lessons. So if there's just one lesson on something and the child's already excelled at it, each week we send jumpstarts to our clients. And these are 20 to 30 minute lessons that you could do during, you know table time or during morning, you know, cleanup, and you could focus on one specific lesson. And the great thing about Silas is you look at a lesson, you don't have to do it that day. You could break it out over 3 days. You could mm-hmm. break it up over, you know, a week. There's two lessons, I believe, in each curriculum, as well as then two activities. There's a home extension. There's a, you know, finish up topic that you're going to be talking about. There's a lot within one competency. So teachers can use it however they want, and they don't have to use all the components. So if they don't want to do movies because it's too time consuming, or they want to say, I don't want any technology. The funny thing is, you know, kids love gaming. We try to stay away from gaming, but it engages them as well. And they know how to use it better than we do. So it's something that they want to do because, again, they're talking about these topics that are not easy to talk about with people and with their peers. But the beauty of Silas is that there's so many different components. They don't all need to be used. They're all there, but you can pick and choose how you wish for it to work. And again, you can individualize it so it's right for that student.
So earlier I asked you if you sell individual licenses to schools or school licenses, but do you sell to individuals who are not I'm just thinking about some people I know and some from even in the book whose children are not in school anymore, who though these lessons, some of them still might be appropriate for the developmental level of their child.
We are working on that. We haven't done that yet, but we are now working with therapists and counselors who have private practices. Mm-hmm. So if people are home they're homeschooling, mm-hmm. I don't see why we couldn't do that as an individualized license. Okay. You know, we don't want to say no to anyone. We want people to use it, but if it makes sense, you know, we wouldn't just say, yeah, use it. I would talk to that family and make sure that they know how to use it so we could set them up correctly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's awesome. That is just a phenomenal program, and I can see why it's so incredibly useful. And I personally would like to learn even more about it. So you and I will continue to chat about that in the whole program and how maybe I can, you know, continue to support you in what you're doing, because I really do think it's essential, especially now, especially after, you know, so many kids that were in school and then they were out of school almost for 2 years and then getting back into school after everything that happened. I think we have a lot more social emotional needs that have to be addressed, and they don't have to be with, as you said, students who are eligible for special education. I think our entire population needs some of these skills again, or maybe for the first time. So thank you for sharing that as well. So we just have a couple minutes left, and I always try to ask my guests at the end, you know, is there anything else that you would like to share? Anything that you wanted to share that we didn't kind of get to?
No, I think you are spot on. I think that when it comes to an IEP, don't be afraid. It's your kid. You asked for whatever you want. You know, everyone thinks their child is special no matter what. And don't set your own limits. Don't do that, because don't think you're being a pain in the butt. Don't think that you're, you know, causing a problem and they may look at you poorly. You got to think about you, and you got to put your family first. And if you don't have the ability to have an advocate, you don't have the ability to have I had to get a lawyer, you know, I mean, people have to do a lot of things. Ask a friend, you know, come to me, ask me, we could give you, you know, answer questions, or, you know, lots of times you can bring people to your meetings. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid. You know, like I said, I didn't know what I didn't know. I mean, I have a sister who's a social worker. I didn't know I could have her come with me to my meeting. You know, I was going to go in there just by myself. So, you know, you have to be an advocate. You have to be your child's advocate, because they can't be right now.
Yeah. Margaret, it was so awesome to meet you last week in person and to have you on today and to get to know more about your story and about Silas Solutions. Thank you so much again.
It was my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right. And thank you, Fran, for joining us and anyone else who joined us. It is time for us to go, though. So I will, next week will be a recorded episode because I will be at a conference that day, but it will be with Richard Lavoie or Rick Lavoie, and he is huge in the learning disabilities world and someone who has just been a tremendous impact on my world of education. And so I'm very excited to share him with you next week. I'll see you then.
Bye. Thank you.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.